This time on the Plutopia podcast, climate scientist Michael Tobis, our man in the Great White North, also known as Canada, joins us to talk about U.S.-Canadian relations. As Canadians go to the polls this week to elect new members of Parliament, the Trump administration's ongoing attacks on Canadian tariffs and trade loom large.
Nobody was kicking them out of Greenland. Nobody's kicking them out of the north of Canada. Nobody's saying you guys can't have our minerals. What we live on is shipping you guys our minerals. That's why we're a prosperous country, is because you guys want our minerals and we ship them. You want our grain and our oil and we ship them. What we've learned is that we've abandoned our manufacturing sector and a lot of the high-tech sector to America. And now that we're saying, and I really can't overemphasize how widespread this is, people do not want to do business with the United States.
Hey, welcome everybody to the latest episode of the Plutopia News Network podcast. I'm John Lebkoski, and I'm one of the co-hosts for this podcast. The others are my partner, Scoop Sweeney, and our friend, Wendy Grossman, who's logging in from Canada, as is our guest, Michael Tobis. Michael is a software developer and a climate scientist. He's based in Ottawa, Ontario, Canada. And, he's got a doctorate in climate science, and he's done a lot of software design and management stuff. But we're going to talk about something else today. In the past, we've talked mostly about climate change to Michael. But today, we want to talk about the Canadian perspective on the current slightly rocky relations with the United States. Donald Trump, or Mad King Donald, as I call him, has said that he wants to annex Canada and make it part of the USA. And I think Canadians are not amused. So what do you think, Michael? How do you feel about that?
Well, the way Donald makes the pitch doesn't really go over very well. it's really surprising how this country was all fractured and at each other's throats, and everybody blaming everybody else just a few weeks ago. And now we've decided that we all agree that we're better off than the United States right now, and that we don't want any part of this deal. And so generally, life goes on. Nothing much has changed, but it doesn't take much to get people started about the situation in the United States. And there are very few people who think that, who buy the whole Fox News line. You can get Fox News up here, which I was disappointed to find when I moved back. But in this part of the country, most parts of the country, nobody pays any attention to it. And we pretty much agree with the general blue approach to who this guy is and what he's doing. And under those circumstances, and under the circumstances where we think things are going badly in various ways in the States, I just had a complete knee replacement. It cost me $0 and 0 cents.
That was so, my first reaction was Canadians will never give up their health insurance.
You'd be surprised. There is a conservative movement here, and they were gaining strength before all of this. But Donald has driven the country away from that perspective pretty quickly. So yeah, I don't think a lot of Canadians understand how much better things are here on a day-to-day basis. One thing I would say about Canadian relationships to the United States is there are really two kinds of Canadians. And I haven't heard anybody else say this. This is just my opinion. There's Canadians who spend a lot of time in the States, and there are Canadians who never go to the States at all. And in spite of the fact that we're a long, skinny country sort of attached to is sort of a, like a film on top of your country. A lot of people have had this negative opinion about the United States for a long time. I was the other sort. As you probably know, I spent a lot of my life in the States, most of it really, and a lot of it in Texas. And I'm pretty enthusiastic about a lot of things about the United States. But it sure was a relief to get here and have medical care not hanging over my head all the time. And it's just, that is night and day. And there are other things. The just general threatening atmosphere, the risk of kicking off violence no matter where you are, especially in certain places, doesn't really happen here.
Yeah, nothing brings a country together like being threatened by a fascist horde.
Well, not everyone will go so far as to say fascist, but yes, that is in fact, that hasn't been in fact a unifying thing.
I was going to use the term common enemy.
Common enemy. And that's really sort of the biggest change in how Canada works as a country. This isn't like my day-to-day experience. This is how the whole system works. Is the French Canadians were always very tentative about it all. They don't feel like they're Canadian. They feel like they're Quebecers, Quebecois, and they never had much loyalty to Canada. But now they realize that they're better off with Canada than without Canada when the United States is sort of looking to Canada as, I should have come up with a clever name for it, but it's basically a pile of resources, for, just sort of a stock room, right? He wants the water, he wants the minerals, he wants the oil, and for some reason, he wants the Arctic, You can speculate on why that is.
My theory is somebody showed him a map and he saw the US and Canada and Greenland as this giant mass bigger than Russia,
Well, I don't know. Maybe it is that with climate change, the Arctic is going to be sort of like a great resort area soon enough. So we can build resorts there.
Yeah, it's going to be a long time on the the Gaza resort is the sort of the North Greenland resort. But they had the run of the place. Nobody was kicking them out of Greenland. Nobody was kicking them out of the north of Canada. Nobody was saying, you guys can't have our minerals. It's what we live on is shipping you guys our minerals. That's why we're a prosperous country, is because you guys want our minerals and we ship them, and you want our grain and our oil and we ship them. It's what we've learned is that we've abandoned our manufacturing sector and a lot of the high tech sector to America. And now that we're saying, and I really can't overemphasize how widespread this is, people do not want to do business with the United States. The individuals are, not buying Jell-O and saying, okay, what's the Canadian equivalent of Jell-O? The grocery stores are busier than they were because everybody's reading the fine print on all the packages. And companies are cutting off relationships with American companies, and the government is probably going to cancel an order for $35 billion worth of F-15 airplanes. And so this goes through the entire society. Everybody's looking for ways to disengage. But we've been so tied, been so entangled.
This makes me think about, I just went through the ordeal of buying a car and I did some research. And one of the things I was wondering about was, which cars are actually American cars? None of the cars are 100% American, and none of them are 100% some other country either. It's a mix. The parts are coming from all over the place. Right. So, like, you can see what there's actually a table I found that showed what percentage of each car was actually manufactured in the USA. And, you know, I think the highest was 60%. So when you're, you know, when your people in Canada are trying to find things that were not made in America, depending on the product, it might be kind of hard to find something that, even if it seems to have been made in Canada, wasn't at least in part made in the United States. And that's because we've had very open global trade for the longest time now.
Right. And we've had for 25 years, we've had a, you wouldn't know it listening to what Trump says, we've had a free trade treaty between Mexico, Canada, and the U.S. And you listen to Fox News and they're saying Canadians are charging, you know, 200% tariffs. And it turns out that that's not really true. It turns out that it's mostly a free trade zone. And those small exceptions were negotiated at great length and all the countries signed on to them. So, like when you buy a General Motors car or a Ford, some of the assemblies on either side of the border and the car or the bulk of the car goes back and forth because Detroit and Windsor are the same town, right? And it's just a bridge, and it's part of the factories on one side and part of the factories on the other side.
It's just very much like the, sounds to me very much like the Northern Irish border between Northern Ireland and the Republic, where things go back and forth, you know, even though one, that was what the Brexit messed up, was the agreement that made all of that simple.
True, although you're talking about something on a bigger industrial scale, especially when you're talking about cars, because there's a lot of money in cars in North America, a lot more than there is in, you know, whatever they do in Ireland, as tends to be on a much smaller scale. So there's been, the economists all over the world, and particularly in the United States, have been encouraging this unification of the North American economy. And it's just such a classic problem of dealing with the United States from the outside, is you get pushed to do one thing and they say, no, we really mean it. Do this, do this, do this. And then one day they say, well, you're taking advantage of us. We're going to change everything. And so now there was like, it's a massive bait and switch. Now we have, you know, a third of a car factory. And what good is a third of a car factory? Not a heck of a lot. And there's, I don't know, 100,000 jobs on the line. And all of a sudden, that part of the car factory is on the wrong side of the border and there's a 25% tariff. And how are they going to keep track of it if the thing goes back and forth five or six times? How are they going to do the paperwork? Which part is added, which time, and all this stuff? So, and today is actually the day they're supposed to come down with the, you've heard Trump say it's Liberation Day.
Liberation, yeah.
Well, it's, you know, the rest of the world, it's like, let's get some clarity as to what these tariffs are going to be. And so far, you know, day's pretty much over on the East Coast, and I don't think we've heard yet.
So, it's at 4 p.m. Eastern time, I think.
Okay. So
it's coming up. Yeah.
One thing that I've noticed is I have some conservative friends online who are always going on just, you know, really liking the whole idea of the tariffs, until one of them, who was really conservative, got really upset with the whole tariff thing because he likes Canadian whiskey, and he went out, he was going to, you know, corner the market on Canadian whiskey before the tariffs all, you know, dried up that market. He went out and there was none available, and he turned somewhat liberal after that.
Well, yeah, they won't sell us their whiskey anymore already.
It's the other way around. We won't buy yours. So
I thought that you weren't selling or buying.
No, I think what's happened is that a lot of people sympathize with Canada and have been buying up any Canadian product they can find. He can blame the liberals for that. Whether you're going to want to have more Canadian whiskey after the 25% tariff kicks in, which could be tomorrow for all I know. That's another story. But yeah, it does hit people in the pocketbook. But most of what Canada sells to the States isn't obvious, right? Yeah, there's maple syrup and yeah, there's whiskey. But there's fertilizer in huge quantities. And so there's this stuff called potash. I'm not a farmer. I don't even know what it is. But we sell it to the States by, you know, thousands of tons, and trainloads of it go down there. And if that gets cut off, or if the price goes up 25%, there's a question of what that does the entire agriculture and food system in the United States, because it seems like almost all the farms are having some of this stuff. It's not stuff you go in the store and buy. There aren't a lot of made in Canada products at HEB, and if you were going to boycott us individually, you would have a hard time finding what to not buy. But there's an awful lot of materials that go across the border, and we are realizing that this was a mistake on our part. That shutting down our manufacturing capability, our engineering capability, shipping it all off to the States made us vulnerable to this exact situation.
And well, the States shipped it off to other places too. So you mentioned earlier about like something about conservatives in Canada. Mm-hmm. And in the US, the way that we spell conservative is C-R-O-O-K.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just wondering, are you saying you got a bunch of crooks up there? Because conservative here doesn't mean what it used to mean. I mean, people will say they're conservative, and that's usually a signal that they're part of this.
Yeah, I may not be the right person to ask about details of Canadian politics in that way, because I spent so much of my life in the States. There's always been a party that has conservative in its name. So we've got a conservative party and a liberal party. But for the longest time, the conservative party wasn't called the conservative party. It was called the progressive conservatives, which Americans tend to find a little bit absurd. And the concept of liberal here doesn't mean exactly what it means in the States. So it's not a one-to-one map, right? Just to make the point a little stronger, the Liberal Party in Australia is the right-wing party. So these words mean different things in different countries.
In Australia.
Very different people.
But there's a lot of media influence from the States. And so the distinction tends to get blurred, and the current version of the Conservative Party is very much like the Republican Party. Now, as for corruption, I don't like sticking my neck out on these things, but the Premier of Ontario, the equivalent of a governor, just got reelected in a landslide, and he's a traditional old school machine politician. He rewards his friends, and he doesn't always do what's good for the people. And so he is a conservative. He is a conservative. But on the other hand, he is very much standing up to Trump and not supporting the federal guy who is trying to have it both ways. So we are going to have an election in a few weeks. And I find when you talk about Canadian politics to Americans, they tend to tune out a little bit. So I don't know how much to get into it.
We're not tuning out as much as we used to.
Mm,
because sooner or later, you may be one of our states. So we want to know what's going on there. Right.
So I asked around for people, if they had any opinions they wanted to share. And there's just one that I really thought was worth mentioning. And this was, it's a guy I know. He's a retired minister in the United Church of Canada, and that is basically mainline Protestant, sort of not evangelical. They consider themselves liberal Christians. For me, they're, they're not hipsters, right? He made 4 points. I see if I can pull them up. One is definitely don't blame Americans as individuals.
I saw that in action yesterday. This guy and I arrived at the cab rank at Windsor's train station at the same time. And it turned out we were going like around the corner from each other. So he decided, since he was first, he offered to let me share his cab.
Mm-hmm.
And he insisted on paying for the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to give him a $10 bill. And he's going, no, 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 no. And I said, look, he said, I'm Canadian. We're Canadians. This is what we do. And I said, you should not be. I'm American. What are you doing? And he still insisted on paying for the cab. That was my introduction to Windsor. Well, my reintroduction to Windsor.
All right. So in addition to don't hold it against Americans as individuals, one, Americans should know that Trump's rhetoric has done more to unify Canadians and stir Canadian patriotism than anything else has done in the last 70 years. That's absolutely true. And I think we've touched on that. Two, Americans need to understand that Canadians are tough and will rise to the occasion and cope with whatever deprivations the situation imposes on us. So we're not going to be cowed by all of this. And, the whole, you don't have any cards in this situation, which Vance test marketed on Zelensky and now is using those words with Canada. The thing about playing cards. And the third is, if you actually invade, don't kid yourself, we're fighting back. And that is so strange, because there isn't a Canadian who doesn't have American friends. I probably have a disproportionate amount of American friends compared to Canadian friends, but there isn't a Canadian who doesn't have American friends. Maybe that's an exaggeration. A lot of us have family, a lot of us have friends, a lot of us have professional contacts. It's not like we're far away. It's not like we speak a different language. It's not like we listen to different music. In a lot of ways we're similar, and it's very weird to consider a war. But if you look what the Ukrainians were saying before the Russians marched in, it was like, they'll never do it. It's ridiculous. Why would they do that? They have plenty of influence over here anyway. It's so 19th century to be a sort of occupying territory rather than going for influence, right? The Chinese go for influence. The Russians go for territory. And the Russians are just sort of backwards about this. And you would have thought the Americans were going for influence. And then just one day they said, no, we don't want influence. We want territory.
Well, because Trump follows Putin.
It is. It's like he wants a Ukraine situation because his mentor has one. So he wants one too. And if we're going to be, bleeding all over each other, that's really friggin' crazy. But if it comes to that, we will. We're not going to roll over. And it's such a strange thing to be saying. But that was one of the points that this guy, and like I said, he is a straight arrow mainline Protestant. You don't have this exact church in the States, but it's pretty much, oh God, what do you call it? I forget what you call it. There's the Church of England, and then there's
The
the,
Episcopal Church.
it's pretty much an Episcopal type
Yeah.
of,
I thought that might be it,
not a
but
person you expect to have radical opinions. And he's saying we'll fight back. And I'm sure that the French Canadians will fight back. And I'm sure that the English Canadians will fight back. I'm sure the native people will fight back. Whether the various immigrant communities will fight back, I don't know. But one of the largest immigrant communities is, in fact, Ukrainian. So they're not happy either.
well, having experienced Canadian winter back in the day, I don't think these people understand what it's going to be like to, invade Canada in the depth of winter, because it'd be kind of like Hitler, invading Russia. That didn't work out too well for them.
Vance practically went up to the North Pole with a spring parka on. He didn't even have a hat. I mean, the guy was uncomfortable. Yeah, I mean, there's snow on the ground right now. I look out that window and there's snow.
Where are you exactly?
I moved from Ottawa to a small town a little bit west of Ottawa. We're on the line pretty much with Minneapolis in terms of how far north we are. So
There's a
yeah,
lot of north, and there's a lot of north above you.
yeah, there's not a lot of people up there.
No.
Canada's sort of shaped like Chile, except Chile doesn't have all that extra territory behind it.
I
But
used to hear that the population was basically in the bottom 100 miles, so Canada effectively is 100 miles by 4,500 miles.
that's basically it, yeah.
But there's still a fact, I still remember being in Winnipeg for the folk festival in the late 1970s and being told that one of the festival artists was going to Churchill, Manitoba, 1,000 miles north, to teach people to play guitar in an igloo. And this was in July.
I don't think they actually have igloos in July in Churchill,
Probably
but
not.
yes, there are isolated settlements, and if the Arctic ever does become a shipping open waters for shipping, Churchill will be a major port. On it's on Hudson's Bay. So the grain will go up to Churchill and then from there out to Europe if the
It's
Russians
interesting to
let them
listen to you
come.
talk, in relation to some of the bits. I don't know a lot of Canadian history, but I know I've every so often I've encountered a Canadian folk song, and of course it's reflected in those. And one of the ones I've come across in the past is a song, Newfoundland objecting to wanting to keep the great Canadian wolf at bay and not wanting to be subsumed into Canada.
Yeah, this just goes to show how much this country is divided. So
We used to
Newfoundland
say,
was Newfoundland was it was independent of Canada until 1949. It was a separate English-speaking Commonwealth country until 1949. In my lifetime, I have received Newfoundland coin in change. They were the same size. I should have kept it. It was fun. But yeah, you 5 or 6 years before I was born, Newfoundland wasn't even part of Canada. And yeah, I haven't heard that song, but I'm not surprised that it exists. And then there are the other Atlantic provinces, and then there's this big French thing. And then there's Ontario, which has really most of the people and most of the commerce, which and then there's a big gap between basically Toronto and Winnipeg that's totally unoccupied. There's two cities to maybe you could say three cities in basically 1,000 miles, and they're not big cities. They're 100,000 people sort of thing. And then and there's one part of Canada where there's only one paved road that goes from east to west. If you cross Canada by car, there's only one way through that part. So this just emphasizes how narrow and skinny it is. And all these places are far apart, and they all have separate histories. And the only thing that holds them together is that they, for differing reasons, never wanted to be part of the United States. And so it's the only, it's a country that exists largely in relationship to another country. It's like, we're different. And how different are we? Well, we're not that different, but we do have a completely different form of government. And we do have, I don't even think Canadians are aware of how much more socialist they are than Americans. Like I said, not only did the state pay for my surgery, but I needed a walker and stuff. And so there was a local club that lent it to me. And again, I didn't have to pay for it. And I just thought this was really nice. Oh, you've got a Mercator projection up there, John. It makes us look bigger than we are.
Yeah, I mean, I'm showing this basically to show how everything relates to everything else. I mean, you see, if you took Greenland and Canada and the United States and you made them all one thing, that would be huge, right? Yeah,
well,
and
you'd
be dominating a huge piece of the
globe. But it looks bigger than it would be because of the Mercator projection. Right.
No, I understand that, but I'm just saying that it's still a lot of territory, and then it's right across the little bit of ocean here from Russia and the rest of the...
I'm clicking on your screen. That's ridiculous. Try and pull up a map of the Arctic Ocean instead of that, and you get actually probably a better perspective.
Let me see.
I
give me a second. I'll
don't do Google. It's just going to confuse you.
Huh?
Don't
well,
do.
I don't. Just you mean just get a map from somewhere?
Yeah, it's got to be centered on the North Pole, or it's going to confuse you.
Okay, hold on a minute.
You know, Michael, there was a line I used to hear that I always thought described the difference very well, which is that the U.S. is a melting pot and Canada is a mosaic.
Yeah, we say that a lot. And
I like that line, though. I think it does capture something real.
Yeah, and it also captures a thing that Canadian conservatives hate, that the earlier Trudeau, the father, said that there's no such thing as an all-Canadian boy, that the idea makes no sense. And we don't, there's no such thing as an average or typical Canadian, because it's so scattered. And there you go. That's the right picture. So yes, it is big, but it's not that big.
Well, the Northwest Passage was initially considered impassable back until climate change took a bite out of it. How is it looking? I would see Russia as being way more of a threat, because they're starting to really take interest in the navigation up in that area.
That's, the Russians are very interested, and this goes to explain the situation. To some eyes, including mine, America gains nothing by all this saber rattling against Denmark and Canada, but Russia gains. So it feels to some people, including myself, that this is Putin's doing and not Trump's. Putin put a bug in Trump's ear that, you should own Greenland, but what he means is, Europe should not own Greenland, and you should own Canada, by which he means Canada is too much like Europe, and you should be up there too.
Yeah, that's one of the speculations I've heard is that Canada could join the EU.
I would love it. I am thinking of, after the election, just jumping on the bandwagon and trying to make it happen. But boy, would that tick Trump off something. And I don't know if the timing is right. It would have been better if we had done it 10 years ago. A lot of people in Europe like the idea, because they're constrained in terms of land. And if there's one thing Canada isn't, it's constrained in terms of land. It's the other part of what makes this country special is there is that great wilderness. And there's probably nothing to compare with it anywhere else on Earth, maybe Australia, where there's all of this more or less untouched nature. It's very hard to get to most of it, but even the parts that are on the fringe that you can easily, you know, get to and see where you would take a canoe if you were willing, there's a lot of it, and it's really very beautiful, and it's a privilege to be in it.
Yeah, the untouched nature is going to be touched severely if you become a 51st state, because that first thing that'll happen is you'll be up to your ears in oil wells and, you know, forestry and mining that you know wasn't happening up in those areas. You know, they get greedy.
Yeah, just like they're going to do that to the national parks here too, isn't it?
I hear you. The thing is, we're not thinking of what happens if we're a 51st state. First of all, we know he's lying that we'll be the 51st state. We will be another Puerto Rico. There is no way he will give us senators and congressmen, right? They don't want 40 million Canadian votes, right? So we actually don't believe that. Because, you know, even if they only gave us two senators, which hardly seems fair, we've got slightly more people than California. It's a smallish country, but it's a huge freaking state.
And well, I think you should hold out to be at least 10 states.
But nobody here takes this seriously. Nobody believes that we will ever be the 51st state.
I don't believe it either. I've spent
not
enough
for
time
a thousand years.
Well, I mean, it's impractical and it wouldn't happen, but that doesn't mean that he's not serious about it. And in fact, I believe that he wants to take, in addition to Canada and Greenland, I think the day's going to come, depending how long he's around, when he talks about taking Denmark too.
Actually, Panama is the head of Denmark.
Panama actually makes
sense. Yeah, that's true.
From a 19th century imperialist point of view. But you're so thinking 19th century. It just makes no sense in the modern world.
I would challenge the use of the pronoun you there. We are not thinking.
Oh, no, we're talking about Donald Trump. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm using the French on. There isn't a good English pronoun for this. You know, if you say one shouldn't do this, one sounds really freaking pretentious. But it's a good pronoun. It's sort of vague as to the person.
Yes.
If you're thinking 19th century imperialism, having everything up to the Isthmus of Panama be in one empire is a pretty strong defensible position. But that's not how the world works anymore. It's just crazy. And meanwhile, to be destroying you know, the universities, which is really where the empire comes from, is the scientific and technical capacities.
I mean, you may be missing the point that, yeah, it's not the way the world works anymore, but it's the way certain people want the world to work again.
Yeah, well, you know? It is, but it's I'm just emphasizing that it seems pretty naive and pointless. But anyway, nobody in Canada is talking about what we'll do when we're the 51st state, or who's going to come in and do what with the land when we're the 51st state? That, I have to tell you, is there have been times in history when a lot of Canadians would have gone for this, but this is not one of those times. And there is just no interest in discussing what happens after we attain to our, you know, longed for statehood. It just, there's no constituency for it.
Well, I would say, though, I mean, there are people, I mean, I'll speak for myself. I never believed that Trump would do what he has done and do it as fast as he's done it. And I'm talking about it in this term.
Right.
And we now see that there's really no barrier to the Trump administration doing whatever it wants to do. Because if you decide you're going to break the law and you're at, you know, you're in that position. And if you decide that, you know, regardless of what the courts say, you're going to do it, regardless of what the legislature might say, you're going to do it. I mean, who's going to stop him?
Right. And this is why your tourist industry is shutting down. I mean, your foreign tourist industry is shutting down.
You would think that somebody in the hotel business would have thought of that.
Well, nobody thought that he would, you know, take German tourists and throw them in jail, and he threatened to send them to a gulag in El Salvador. I mean, this is like, you know, it's over the top of over the top. Nobody expected that.
Yeah.
And like I said, there aren't that many stories of well-to-do, left-leaning white folk ending up in ICE detention facilities. But it doesn't take a lot of these stories to really scare people off.
A lot of the cruise firms are beginning to cancel their cruises because people aren't booking. They're afraid to go anywhere
Don't want to set foot anywhere near the United States. And there's always been, like I said, there's always been these Canadians who are afraid of the United States. There's always been this one faction that just goes, oh, the United States is too scary, I won't ever go there. And I never thought I would be in that faction, but right now I am.
It's posing an interesting problem for scientific and technical conferences too, because if they put it in the States, there's a lot of people who won't go there. But if they don't put it in the States, all those graduate students in the States who are in the U.S. on a visa are afraid to leave to go to the conference because they're afraid they won't be able to get back in. So where do you put it? You know, and it's really a serious problem that's being discussed in all sorts of different organizations right now.
Yep.
And you know, Neil Young, who is he has dual Canadian and U.S. citizenship and is on tour in Europe right now. I was just reading this morning, is convinced that they're not going to let him come back into the U.S. when his tour's done.
He's a U.S. citizen and he can afford lawyers. So I tend to think.
But there is a zone at the border at which non-citizen has zero rights.
Yeah, that's true. But I just think.
Neil is kind of under the gun because Trump said, you know, anyone with dual citizenship is going to be deported. That's the thing from the other day. And that's probably what set Neil Young off.
Yeah, he also opposed Trump's use of his music during campaigns. I mean, very, you know, to the point about he would not have his music being used by Donald Trump. And that really irritated Trump.
Did he say dual citizen who were naturalized in the States or any dual citizen?
If you become naturalized, you're supposed to give up your other citizenship.
Right.
And so
but it's the other way around is not
gray area, which is the Canadians don't recognize that you stopped being Canadian.
Right.
But you have to tell the Americans that you have. And this is one of the reasons I never actually did it, And so, you know, now I'm I hope I don't get stopped at the border. I hope if I get stopped at the border, they send me back. But right now, I don't feel like visiting. And this is the time of year that I love coming down to Texas. It's really miserable here, and it's really gorgeous down there.
You could get a free vacation in El Salvador.
I know. It's just been a habit for me to spend springs in Texas, and now I don't get to. And I mean, they're probably not come after me, but like a lot of people, I don't. My blood pressure can't handle it. I'm an old man. I don't want to deal with this. And it's got to be murdering your tourist industry. It's got to be. And I mean, I don't know, how did South By go this year?
Yeah, it didn't seem quite as busy as it has been in the past. But that has been the case since COVID, really. There were still a lot of people there. And of course, we had a big delegation from like Dubai. The Canadian house that they normally have at South by Southwest was canceled by the Canadians. And I guess any participation that Canada had in South by Southwest was not happening. So I'm really not sure. I'd have to see the numbers, which I haven't, to have a sense of how much of an impact it had. But I think next year it may have more of an impact. But next year they're compressing South by Southwest into like they're shaving a couple of days off, and they're not going to have as much real estate to work with because the convention center is going to be demolished and replaced, and that's going to take 3 years.
Can I just insert? I looked up the Trump dual citizenship thing, and Newsweek and several other places are saying that actually that was a fake post.
Good. Glad to hear it.
Yeah, I was.
Yeah.
Maybe.
But it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, even if that is a fake post.
Well, as Newsweek points out, a number of members of Trump's own family are dual citizens.
Yeah, well, they would
They
get a
would
bump.
be, I know, they'd be grandfathered in somehow. Yeah.
Yeah, they would write the law in some crazy way.
Nonetheless, it appears to be for now not true.
That would be interesting if they deported Melania
Or Musk, who
or
apparently
Musk.
got his green card under false pretenses.
So I
Yeah.
read. Yeah.
Yeah, he was working before he got
Very
his
legally.
card, and that is a bit
That's
of a
not.
violation there.
That's a ticket to El Salvador, is what that is.
Well,
Working without a work visa.
the pro-business Republicans are starting to get concerned because all of this is really starting to tank some certain industries. The country's in trouble when the Hooters restaurant chain or club chain goes into bankruptcy. It's like, say what?
Well, restaurants going into bankruptcy is a whole other story. There's this private equity suck all the juice out of the company thing going on. That's I don't know if Hooters is a direct result of Trump, but who can say?
It would be nice to think it was because we live in a more enlightened times, wouldn't it?
That was I almost want to laugh ruefully about that. Well, here's to more enlightened times. What can I say? What else did I want to tell you?
I just saw something that suggested that that Hooters bankruptcy thing was, oh no, somebody accused them of making an April Fool's joke, but it really is real. There really is a
Well,
bankruptcy.
this is another thing about our times, is that we don't know what's real and what's not real, and we
It's
find
true.
ourselves believing things that sound plausible because everything else sounds so implausible.
Well, the Hooters bankruptcy thing is on Yahoo Finance, and that's actually a pretty good source.
Well, I'm sure they're going bankrupt. We don't know why. And I don't know if we
it's basically the original founders are forming their own company. They're buying up all the company owned locations, and they want to return it to the good old days. It's like, oh, good.
Yeah.
Well. Doesn't it feel like John Oliver should do something with the Hooters bankruptcy? That feels like a story for him.
Definitely.
So they have a founder-led buyout. I don't know. That looks to be more like an accounting trick than the kind of bankruptcy that would be devastating. Apparently, the company is going to be okay.
Yeah. So
there's a lot. I mean,
Musk selling Twitter to himself and taking a
twice
$12 billion tax write off from it.
Well, I know that some of the bank loans and stuff were coming due. Was that part of the reason, do you think, or?
For which? Are you talking about Twitter? Or,
yeah.
I'm sorry, X.
Yeah.
People keep calling it Twitter. You know, they just can't stop.
Well, some people actually insist on calling it Twitter to try to retain it as some sort of, but it isn't Twitter. It isn't what Twitter was anymore. I think it's sort of more honest to call it X just because it isn't the thing we knew and loved for many years, you know.
Yeah, well. So anyway, snow on the ground.
Well, you know you're in Canada.
Freezing rain possible tonight, but I think we're into spring after that.
The first time I went to Winnipeg, it was the end of March. And I noticed that there was a lot of water in the streets, and I was utterly mystified where it was coming from. And then the guy, Mitch Podolak, who ran the folklore center there, said, you know, the snow level in my backyard has gone down a foot this week, and you can't even tell.
Mm.
And that's when I realized it was like the little house books by Laura Ingalls, you know, that Wilder, that you know, you would start hearing dripping, and it meant spring was coming. Well, you know, where I grew up in the northeast of the United States, it didn't freeze in October and stay frozen until March. So I had not experienced that before.
Yeah, we had a pretty serious February. We got snowstorm after snowstorm. It was a good 4 feet deep at one point.
Yeah, I had not been someplace where snow just keeps accumulating, never melts.
Yep. So this is the time of year I most want to get out, and maybe next year we'll go to Mexico. I don't know.
This is what I was trying to share a minute ago, but I needed a decent size one. It kills, but it cannot be killed. X, the unknown.
Mm.
That's what I think of when I think about.
It's X. It's a terrible brand, but what, you know, whatever.
He uses X in every one of his companies, apparently. It's just this thing.
Yep.
Didn't he name one of his kids X?
Yeah, X, but there's a bunch of stuff after it, which I can't begin to pronounce.
Right. A bunch of non-standard characters, non-ASCII.
He's a non-standard character for sure. I think all that ketamine is starting to back up on him.
Well, it's kind of an interesting thing, this question about whether Elon Musk is a genius or maybe an idiot savant or something like that. We've been having some debates recently about the Social Security Administration's software upgrade.
Mm-hmm.
So Wired Magazine ran a story that said anonymous sources had told them that Elon Musk intends to upgrade the software of the Social Security Administration. And of course, they're expecting that to be a complete, like, catastrophe.
Well, it's not just that he's planning to upgrade it. He's going to rewrite COBOL code into Java, which is basically, it's like taking this huge thing that was written in one computer language and rewriting it in another computer language. And you're getting rid of all, you know, decades of bug fixing and beating on the code till it works correctly and doesn't make mistakes, and throwing all of that, those sort of man centuries or man millennia away.
Yeah, except we don't really know the credibility of the source of this, what amounts to a rumor so far. It's been repeated on many publications, but always just referencing the source at Wired. And the thing that struck me was, well, there's a couple of things. One is that Elon Musk wouldn't be where he is if he didn't have some competence to run a project like that. It's not like, go flailing into it. And the second part of it is that Social Security Administration has been working on this upgrade since 2017, this modernization. So I believe that he's probably just latching on to that and thinking of carrying it forward. So in that case, you know, they're already like 8 years into it.
Well, that's the case with
I think they're trying to throw AI at it. And I don't know about you, but I'm an AI skeptic.
Me too.
It depends on what you think AI is going to do for you. AI is known to do fairly competent production of code, though I would think it would be insane to think that you could feed a massive system into it and have it create a new version of that system in some other kind of code, which is kind of what they've been talking about. But I don't really believe, I'm not convinced that's the plan unless I see some real evidence that that's the plan.
Yeah, if they train it off of some system that has its own errors, so it's going to incorporate those. So you have to be careful when you're doing that kind of thing.
But the Social Security Administration system is written on COBOL. COBOL is a language that has worked very well, and it's still supported. There are many large like organizations that are using COBOL to this day because they haven't been able to find anything better, and because it is difficult to upgrade a large and complex system. And as I said, the Social Security Administration realized that their system needed work, that it needed modernization. And they started a modernization project in 2017. And, you know, they had this huge document that kind of explains what they were going to do with it. Anyway, I'm just saying that I think people make too many assumptions in general. And, you know, making this assumption about him, making assumptions about what Trump can or can't do,
John, look at the context. Look at how many other stupid things have happened in the last few weeks. I mean, did you see the story about them telling everybody they can't work remotely, and then they show up to the office and there aren't enough desks and they have to work in the parking lot? Did you see that one?
Right.
That's true.
And we also know that a lot of work had been done at Tesla long before Elon Musk bought it. I mean, there is sort of prior art in his coming into a project after years of work have already been done and then claiming it was his.
He's not an engineer, really. He's an entrepreneur. He knows how to convince people to do things. He knows how to collect money.
And well, supposedly he's had a role as an engineer at SpaceX, where, you know, they're actually doing rocket science. Mind you, I have been one who has argued that Elon Musk is no genius at all, and that, you know, he's a human with human failings, and he's starting to look like he's a little bit, you know, I don't know. This whole thing about ketamine and Adderall and so forth, it looks like he might be a little bit addled from that. I'm just saying that I don't think we can make an assumption that we're making a lot of assumptions about that things are going to succeed or that they're going to fail with so little evidence. And that is because we've been stewing in the juices of a world where evidence is starting to mean less.
Well, you know, Musk, you know, strikes me as being more of a P.T. Barnum kind of character rather than any kind of technologist. Yeah, he's running his own circus. And
does he have a sign that says "this way to the egress"?
I would imagine so.
Get him a trapeze.
But the other thing is, one of the reasons that it sounds so plausible to say that the whole COBOL to Java thing is that this is what young programmers do. They come in and they see something that's been in place for a long time and they say, oh, no, we must have something new. And this is, and they pick on the thing that they know and they decide that must be the best solution.
Yeah, I was actually in one of those when I was doing like technology at the state level. And in Texas, this was when the Republicans took over and they took over the department where I was working, and they brought some guys in who we had this this software package that did a particular thing, and they came in, you know, all big smiles about how well what you built there is really just crap, and we're going to be able to rebuild it and make it much more efficient and much greater and all that. And I watched these guys. I mean, it was really telling. They came in with big smiles on their faces, and before long, they were starting to frown a bit, and the frowns deepened. And it was because they were encountering the complexities of the rule base that they had to code. They didn't even realize that when they got into it. So I suspect that if Elon Musk truly does this thing that they say he's going to do, or if his people try to do it, if they try to rebuild the Social Security Administration system from the ground up, that they're going to be kind of like those guys. They're smiling now, but they'll be frowning later on, and they may never be able to produce anything that's workable. But then, we are near the end of our hour. We are at the end of our hour. Michael, do you have any closing comments?
Yeah, I don't know. I think I've covered all the points I wanted to. And then before we started wandering off, we will not be the 51st state, and Trump will not make us the 51st state, even if he can. You need to think the future is going to be different than the past. We know that. But we don't know how. But two senators from Canada is not going to happen. That's just like unrealistic.
Can I say also the thing that I've been saying for decades, which is that Canada actually has been the best neighbor a country ever had?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's kind of silly to be, sword rattling with Canada. It doesn't make a lot of sense. But we basically are never going to go back to where we were. I mean, this is the consensus in Canada.
And that's the real tragedy.
Said that. It's like, this is over. Whatever it was, it's going to be different now. Because, you know, when you get betrayed by a friend, the friend says, okay, let's go back to how it was. It's never how it was.
No. Well, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me, and thank you for letting me rant.
And, yeah, it's great.
I'll be happy to join you in the future if you like.
All right. Yes, soon. We'll see you.
Take care.
Bye, all.
You can stay in touch with Plutopia at plutopia.io. On Facebook, look for @Plutopia News. On Twitter, it's @Plutopia. This is the Plutopia News Network, 20 minutes into the future.